Here is one question among many after last night. What is Donald Trump's economic vision of America? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Friday, the 22nd of July. Good as always to have you here, everybody. There are, as I said, a whole lot of questions in the wake of the Republican nominee's acceptance speech last night. Ours are of the economic variety. Answers, as many as we can fit in, at least will be forthcoming in the next 4.5 minutes. David Gura is at Bloomberg. Neela Richardson is at Redfin. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
Neela, let me start with you and get your sense of Mr. Trump's speech last night as a statement of his economic vision, would you?
Sure. There is no question that the American economy is carrying a lot of baggage. And you feel that in a lot of middle class households. The anger is real, and it's based on a real reality of lower household incomes and a feeling of less opportunity. The question is, we didn't get a lot of detail on how to solve it. There was a recognition that it exists, which has gone further than some in the political spectrum. But there were no solutions offered that would necessarily solve the problem.
David Gura, your sense?
Yeah, I think it was one component part of a kind of dystopian vision of America in the year 2016. And you saw Donald Trump again urging sort of us to look inward. He talked about a new Americanism rather than globalism, something that we heard talked about in a different context in the UK before that referendum there on EU membership. You know, you once again heard him touting his business credentials to say that we're going to, you know, lead America back to, I think it was safety, prosperity, and peace. So again, like one component part of what he was saying here. I thought most of the speech did have this sort of dark overtone and was focused mostly on law and order and security. But, you know, it was what we heard a lot of him, a lot of what he heard on the campaign trail.
Right. Okay. So breaking down that economic section of which there was one, he made much, Neela, of the trade gap. He said our trade in goods last year, our trade deficit was $800 billion last year. Fact of the matter is, and this is the actual number, if we roll in services, right, because that's how we trade on this planet, goods and services, the trade deficit the United States had was $530 billion. So not entirely accurate there. The question, though, is trade as a proxy for the economy. It's becoming, in his speeches and Mrs. Clinton's speeches and also Bernie Sanders' speeches, it's becoming the whole smash trade is.
You know, it's easy to blame trade for the loss of manufacturing jobs here in the U.S., but there's so much more to the story of globalization than that, more than we have time to talk about. But the question, the Trump's policy is really targeted towards Mexico and China, and it boils down to higher tariffs on their imports coming into the United States. That doesn't solve it for the American people because it just increases the cost of these same goods. And in a situation of stagnant incomes, seeing a goods increase does not help families. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it is a recognition of an issue, but not a solution of how to bring about a change in a really positive way for both countries.
David, he spent some time talking last night about the labor force. He said, and this is a quote, 14 million people have left the workforce. The fact of the matter is that since 2008, and this is according to the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the American labor force has actually grown by 5 million people. Fact is, though, David, that the workforce is changing in this country, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Just picking up on something Neela was just talking about, I think that he talked about manufacturing, but he didn't address the problems with productivity. This country is manufacturing an awful lot of goods. It's just doing it with fewer workers, and that's something he didn't really address in that speech last night. You know, I think also getting back to something Neela was saying about the sort of sense that that things are wrong with the economy in this country. I think that we all know somebody who's out of work or somebody who's not working in a job that he or she wants to be working in. He was picking up on something there. You know, I would say that he was selective with the facts here. You know, he talked about African-American unemployment. He sort of exaggerated how many young African-American men and women are out of work. But, you know, as I noted immediately last night, even the real number, which was less than what he said it was, is still a really discouraging number.
It's 38%
or 31%, I think, of African Americans who are 16 and 19 are out of work. So there is some selectivity there, but I think that he was tapping into, you know, something in the zeitgeist there where we feel like the economy just isn't what we think it should be.
Yep, absolutely true. And Neela, quickly now, a point where Mr. Trump was right. He said household incomes are down $4,000 since the year 2000. Fact is, stuck wages, so that was correct, that was accurate. Stuck wages and incomes are among the biggest problems in this economy.
Right. That's 16 years of stuck wages, yeah. Much of which happened under a Republican president and the aftermath of a housing crisis. So the blame was maybe had been misplaced in that speech. However, yeah, this is not a temporary fix. It's not something the Fed can do on its own. Yep. Unfortunately, it needs collaboration between both parties in Congress. That's what's been missing the last 16 years. And that's why we have an economy that's stuck in the mud.
All right. We got a boogie. Neil Richardson at Redfin, David Gura at Bloomberg, thanks you two for your thoughts.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you, Kai.
All right, have a nice weekend. One more thing GOP convention-wise before we put Cleveland in the rearview mirror. We have been playing you tape from our pop-up podcast, Politics Inside Out, all week. Politics and the economy in this country from the insider and outsider perspective. Today, from the Marketplace desk of What a Difference a Week Makes, a guy that Nancy Marshall Ganser interviewed twice this week. His name is Mark Bossy. He's a Long Island guy, and he is concerned about what he calls cheap goods coming into the United States. But earlier in the week, he was skeptical of Mr. Trump's plan to get out of existing trade deals. Here he is earlier this week.
We got to come up with a plan that keeps us fiscally responsible and also helps our friends and trading partners.
So that was Tuesday. This, what you're about to hear, was last night after yelling himself hoarse.
I got to see a Donald Trump I've been waiting to see for almost 8 months now. Not the bickering, infighting during the primary, the name calling. I got to see a president of the United States standing before me and telling me how he's going to get us back on track. I am 100% committed behind this person today.
Our podcast, Politics Inside Out, is headed to Philadelphia next week. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. On Wall Street today, yeah, there was some trading. Why do you ask? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Coming up.
It's better now, but we have some ways to go.
So the Democrats are going to Philadelphia on Monday. So are we. Kinda. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 53 points this Friday, 0.25%, 18,570. The NASDAQ gained 23 points, 0.4%, 5,097. The S&P 500 advanced 8 points, 0.4%, 2,173. Record, by the way, for the week, and it was the fourth straight winner of a week in a row. The Dow up 0.3%, the NASDAQ up 1.4%. The S&P 500 took home 0.6%. Bond prices held steady. The yield on the 10-year Treasury remained at 1.56%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out Public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. While the politics was happening in Cleveland, Ohio this week, we did the economics. Stories about race and poverty and income inequality in Cleveland, Mississippi. The Democrats get going in Philadelphia, PA on Monday, but we are going to get a head start today in Philadelphia, Mississippi. It's not a town without a reputation and a deep history of segregation and racial violence.
A special report on the three workers for civil rights still missing in Mississippi.
The 1964 murders near Philadelphia of civil rights workers Michael Schwerner, James Chaney, and Andrew Goodman resonate to this day. It is also, though, a town that politicians visit, most particularly Ronald Reagan, who the day after he accepted the Republican nomination in 1980 came to Philadelphia to give a speech at the Neshoba County Fair, a very big deal in those parts. It is, I should tell you, scratchy old tape. You could just about make out what he said, right? I believe in states' rights. This was a controversial speech. States' rights isn't just a throwaway line, but things have changed in history and in this town.
How you doing?
Mayor James Young, Philadelphia's first black mayor, is in his second term. We met up for breakfast at a small cafe right across from the Neshoba County Courthouse called Taste and See.
Sausage and biscuit, I think.
There you go. I'll have what the mayor's having.
Philadelphia's a small town, a little more than 7,000 people, but the local economy's doing all right, especially the past 2 to 3 years.
It's just a combination of homegrown businesses and, you know, you got your Walmarts. Of course, we have Yates, we have Weyerhaeuser, we have a big variety of farming, you know, the poultry business, the logging.
So this is a diversified economy,
this
right?
This is a very
forestry,
diverse.
You got ag, you got...
It's a very diverse. And during the times where everybody else was kind of really gasping for air, we were so diverse that even if we lost one, the other would kind of kick in. So we're blessed. I'm blessed.
How important was it that you got elected mayor of this city?
I'd been in county politics for about 16 years prior to city. I really didn't think that much about it. I was just changing positions, changing office, taking the opportunity to run for city versus county.
Yeah.
Did not realize the impact that it would have statewide or national. I just couldn't see that happening.
Come on, really?
I mean, when you're dealing with people all your life, you know, Philadelphia, Neshoba County, I've been here all my life. I mean, the early 50s, of course, I was a child, early 60s. You know, yeah, we heard about the racism. We knew about the murders and all those things. But this is my life. I've been here. So the first few weeks in office was, like, unbelievable. You know, we had people traveling from Louisiana, Michigan, West Virginia, you know, I just all over, just wanted to see if this is real. And it kind of began to sink in how important it was to them. I mean, it's important to me, but it was just a bigger message to those who was really in the struggle.
I read a quote, and I think it's from you, about how Philadelphia has managed to come from where it was 50 years ago and succeed economically as it's doing today. And you said the way we did it was by facing the past, by owning up to that racism.
Owning up to it. And I think if we could do that, you said not reinvent the wheel, so to speak, but our society is in a constant motion. You know, you guys, younger guys.
And, thank you. Thank you.
You know, y'all got a different way of looking at things, but the problems or the issues are still there, whether it's 1940 or 2016, and how we deal with these core issues dictate whether we succeed or fail. And I think Philadelphia has stepped up to the plate and said, we acknowledge our past. It's not pretty. It's violent. And I'm in my second term as mayor of this city. And the second term was sweeter than the first one because I think the first one people thought, well, it's just a fluke of nature and of timing. You know, timing is everything in some cases. But when I won the second term, it was like confirmation that we trust you, that We re-elect you because of your work and not because of your color.
Do you remember when Ronald Reagan came here in 1980 after the convention?
I was a paramedic then.
Paramedic?
Yeah.
So you were probably working in Neshoba County Fair.
I was. I never seen that many people in one spot.
Tell me about that day.
It was kind of unreal because you had a national person. You had a movie star. You had a guy who's running for president coming to Philadelphia, Mississippi. It's almost like, okay, Mississippi has broken into the national scene politically by him coming here, of all places. And some people have taken it to mean something else. I really don't care about that.
Well, should say he gives a speech about states' rights, which is a loaded term.
And so, you know, my thing is rights to do what? There's a right, there's a wrong. Whether you're gay, straight, multi, whatever, I'm going to respect you. I don't care who you are. And this is where we're missing the boat. And I shouldn't have to beg you to treat me right. And this is, I think, the whole essence of the civil rights movement was, I don't want your house. I don't want your car. I just want to be treated right.
This is going to air in a week, plus or minus. So the events of last night in Dallas.
Wow.
And the shootings 2 days ago in Baton Rouge and St. Paul will probably have faded a bit from the news. But since I have you, a black man, a mayor in a deep South town, now what?
I guess words fail me to try to get inside the head of a violent person. And this is just my opinion. There's something out there, and I can't put my fingers on it, that's trying to create separation in its most violent form. As a black man growing up in the 50s and 60s, we know what it feels like to be afraid to see the blue lights. We know what it felt like to not be doing anything and be pulled over and harassed. But we also know the internal anger that we felt. But we had some foundation not to retaliate in a violent way. This generation doesn't have that foundation. And sadly, from both sides of the fence, innocent lives are being taken. And so I guess the question is, how do we stop it? How do we stop it? And different president ain't going to stop it. Different governor ain't going to stop it. So let's quit trying to put it all in the political arena. It ain't worked. It ain't never worked, and it never will work. And those who say they can fix it, they just lying. I mean, I can't fix you. There's something internal that has to take place.
I was in Cleveland a couple of days ago talking to a woman. She's 70-something years old. She was there when Bobby Kennedy came on the poverty tour. She marched with Dr. King. And I asked her if it was better now. And she said, oh, yeah, it's better. And this is a woman who's living in poverty in the Mississippi Delta, and her life was and is really hard. But she said, it's better, and I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say?
I say it's better, and I'm hopeful. and that sounded like escape, but it is better. If you've never been there, you don't understand what better is. And there's so many people in this country who's blessed, never know what it is to go hungry. Never knew what it was to have to go outside to use the bathroom. Never knew what it was to, again, be afraid of the sheriff and the local PD. Millions of people in this nation have never experienced that. Never experienced being treated wrong simply because you're black. Do we have issues now? Yes. Are they greater now? Yes, because of the split second that you get the news. It happens in Dallas at 6:01, and it's all over the world at 6:05. So we're hearing things more now. So is it better? Yes. Opportunities? Yes. Up to me now? Yes. Freedom to get your education? Yes. Freedom to go where you need to go? Yes. So when I say better, and when she says better, it's better. So when we say that, and I use this term, the millennials say, how can you say it's better when we have all these issues today? Well, Mr. Millennium, you hadn't been there. You weren't there. So let me enjoy my better.
James Young there, the two-term mayor of Philadelphia, Mississippi, over breakfast a week or two ago. We're going to pick up on that last bit he left off with, the idea of better. What does it mean? What does better mean for the people who live here? The night before we talked to the mayor, I met a couple at Brandy's Blues Cafe right down in that same downtown neighborhood. Alan and Jane Crosswhite were having a night out, dinner, and some live music. Jane was born and raised here with her cousin. She's a co-owner of Williams Brothers General Store, their family-owned business that was started in 1907. They sell a little bit of everything. How is business?
You know, business is good. Business is always challenging. I'm not going to say we're thriving. I'm not going to say we're getting by. There are good months and there's bad months. That's just the way it is in business.
There's a mix of farming and manufacturing around here business-wise. Lots of forestry. The Choctaw Indians run casinos and resorts. The courthouse square downtown and the streets nearby are full of little shops, all locally owned.
Oh, yeah, I love this weather.
But up the road, on Carver Avenue, what used to be Main Street here for the African-American community during the Civil Rights era, the only thing going on, really, is a guy weed-whacking on the side of the road. There's a couple of houses, the rusted bones of an old gas pump or two.
Do you suppose they're open?
Come on in, have a seat. Nice
and a place called McClellan's Cafe and Grocery.
What's your specialty?
Oh, I have, like, soul food. I have, like, on Mondays, I have, like, a hamburger steak, rice and gravy, string beans and corn, fried chicken, cornbread and rolls. We have lemonade and tea, and we have a variety of desserts. It consists of peach cobbler, chocolate cake, caramel cake, pound cake.
You got everything.
Strawberry cake, lemon cake.
Beverly McClellan Gill is 59 years old. She runs the place now. Her parents opened it up before she was born.
So you've seen some things around here.
Something, some I was told.
Yeah. Is it better now than when you were a kid?
It's better now, but we have some ways to go. We, as a black race, we have to take on responsibility. We are free, and with freedom comes responsibility.
What about economic opportunity?
We have some economic opportunities here. We have the warehouse company. We have the hospital. We have the casino. You have to be ready to apply yourself. We have lost a lot of jobs during the bad economic times, but unemployment, which, you know, it helps those that did lose their jobs, but there are some opportunities. We need some jobs.
What about young people around here? Do they have a chance? I mean, you've got your own business, right? You're set, basically.
I was blessed because of my parents was responsible. Nowadays, you're going to have to get your education.
Beverly McClellan Gill and Jane Crosswhite run established businesses that have been a part of the Philadelphia economy for a long time. But what about the people just starting out, the ones that are still trying to get that education that Ms. McClellan Gill was talking about?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Kiana Rush is 18 years old, just graduated from Neshoba Central High School, where the majority of the students are white, by the way. She's a member of the Neshoba Youth Coalition. She leaves for the National Guard in August, but she's got a plan.
I want to own my own bakery. I want to go to culinary school for pastry.
But here's the thing. Are you going to come back to Philadelphia and open your bakery, or are you going to go to Jackson or Memphis? Yeah, there's a...
That's a hard question. I love my hometown, but for success, I have no idea about that part.
I think you look like a woman who's thought it through.
Well, I kind of want to be here. I have family here, but I also want to go where the money is.
Yeah. What's it like being a young person in this town?
It's not as difficult for young people as it is for elder people because, you know, we didn't grow up in the same lens as elder people.
So it sounds like race is not a big thing for you in your life.
I feel like it's going to affect maybe our kids or grandkids' generation. Not us.
You're smiling when you say that, but you sound a little sad.
No, things are changing. Like, people say there's not really racism for younger people, but I feel like it's going to come sooner or later that we're going to start turning against each other and clash.
What's the best thing about living in Philadelphia, Mississippi?
The smiling faces. Even though racism still exists, people will still smile in your face just to act like nothing exists.
But you know that it does.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it okay with you that it's not really talked about so much? I mean...
It bothers me that they don't want to talk about it because they know they did wrong.
What's the worst thing about living in Philadelphia, Mississippi?
The worst thing, that it still exists. Racism still exists, and nobody's doing anything about it. That's the worst.
Race and poverty and income inequality and economic opportunity in this country aren't going to be unpacked in a couple of radio stories, even really long radio stories like these have been, or in a set of political conventions, even with convenient historical parallels like the ones we've drawn. Context matters, though, the reality behind all the politicking we've heard this year and will be hearing for the next couple of months. You can hear all the stories from our election year coverage. It's called How the Deck is Stacked, and it's online for you at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, which is going to make some portion of you say, wait, Kai, what are you talking about? And some other portion of you feel really, really old. Reports in the Japanese Nikkei Asian Review this week say that later this month, the very last VCR, like last ever, is going to roll off the assembly line at the last company making them, Funai Electric in Japan. Parts are too hard to find, apparently. Also, and in other news, Funai Electric somehow sold 750,000 VCRs last year. No idea who's buying them. All right, there you go. A little political reality, a little economic reality, all in one half-hour radio show. The Dow added 53 points today, 0.25%, 18,570. The NASDAQ gained 23 points, about 0.4%, 5,097. The S&P 500 up 8 points, 0.4%, 2,173. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the vice president. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you again on Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a good weekend, would you? This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.